Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Irish Fest is starting today here in Milwaukee on the lakefront. And as you can tell, we have our own Irish Fest going on in the studio. Is this great or what? I wish you could all be with us in our little studio. One of the wonderful groups playing is in our studio this morning. They are from the University of Limerick, where they are all students. And we're going to meet them and hear from their music during the course of this hour. Mary Pat Kelly is also joining us. It's been a couple of years since Mary Pat has been with us. And she is busy doing documentaries and writing other books. She published a novel that many of you have read. We had a Facebook announcement from one of you saying that you're reading it for your book club. I read it over the course of the summer, and it's a very moving story, Galway Bay, which really traces the famine. It's the story based on her own great-great-grandmother, Honora Kelly, who escaped with her family from the Great Starvation, 1840s Ireland, and they helped turn Chicago into a frontier town. She has done all kinds of work. She's working right now a great deal. Thank you very much. That was nice. On documentaries, and representatives of the city of Derry in Northern Ireland have come to Milwaukee Irish Fest to tell the story of the key role that Derry played in winning World War II. And Mary Pat will tell us that story and many other stories. We will hear a great deal of music from our group playing traditional melodies, modern rhythms, and new compositions. Students from this group have been rooted within the Irish tradition and are well known and respected within Irish music circles. They have released their first CD. They are playing all over the world. They really were a big hit in Africa. We'll hear about their time there. And we're just going to have a rip-roaring good hour. We're also, we have a pass for Irish Fest, and we invite you to go. The name of the group is, do I pronounce it correctly? Gwicha?
That's it.
That's it. I got it. All right. Gwicha. And we'll meet all the members in a moment. We have passes to Irish Fest, and we're asking you to go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and write a little blurb about your absolute love for the Irish culture, and then we'll randomly choose somebody so you can have a great time. Let me start with Mary Pat Kelly, who's a wonderful guest. She was with us a couple of years ago, and her book, she's written a lot, but the book that I'm most familiar with, because I read it over my vacation, is Galway Bay. Frank McCourt, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Angela's Ashes, had this to say about her book. As they say in Ireland, take your ease with this book. You need time for laughter and tears and pure magic. Mary Pat has done a great deal of documentary work. She has written five nonfiction books. She has a PhD from the City University of New York. She was born and raised in Chicago, and Chicago figures prominently in Galway Bay, now lives on Manhattan's Upper West Side. She has done work for Saturday Night Live, and she is in Milwaukee to, of course, be a part of Irish Fest. And tell me about your current project. You're working on the role of Derry in World War II, Mary Pat.
Right. Remember the last time I was here, we had a great conversation with Tommy Sands about John Hume,
yes,
who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner, also the only man who's also won the Gandhi Peace Prize and the Martin Luther King Peace Prize. And I met him in 1973 when I was working at Good Morning America, and I did a documentary about him and the peace movement in Northern Ireland. But when I finished the documentary, which was in 85, and would show it, it was on PBS, it was on Channel 11 in Chicago, they would see the beautiful scenery and everything, and people would say to me, oh, that can't be Northern Ireland, that must be Southern Ireland, because there was this whole perception over here that Northern Ireland was just, you know, barbed wire and people throwing stones. And I thought, how could I tell the Northern Ireland story about the people and the scenery and the music and everything without maybe getting so heavily into politics? And then I discovered this story that there were 300,000 Americans stationed there during World War II. It was the first place American troops went in January of 1942 because they thought that they could invade Europe, you know, liberate Europe from the Nazis from there. So the more I did the research, the more I found all these amazing stories, including the fact that long before Pearl Harbor, the Navy secretly was building a Navy base in Derry because that was the best port. And the crucial thing in the beginning of World War II was to get supplies over to England. through the Atlantic, which at that time was completely controlled by the U-boats. So they started convoys, and Derry was the port for the convoys. So, oh, I'm so happy, because here, Derry, a city that I had come to love by knowing John Hume and his wife and working with the people, and here it's connected to World War II, a story that I would love to tell. And as a bonus, guess who was there? Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite, my favorite.
I know. And Walter Cronkite agreed to introduce the documentary for nothing.
Oh, Mary Pat.
Although now that he's passed, I can tell this story. When we did it, I said, you know, Mr. Cronkite, this is going to be seen in Northern Ireland, and people that you knew might see you. And he said, well, there's only one person that I'd be interested in if she saw it. So I go, oh, wow, because I'd been bringing over veterans for this documentary, and they'd met old girlfriends and everything. So I said, oh, that'd be great. And he goes, well, I don't know. My wife might not like it. And I said, oh, no. We brought veterans and their wives over, and they were very happy to meet the old girlfriends. And he said to me, not Betsy. So it was just this time where you've got to imagine these young soldiers are being sent into battle, they think. Instead, they end up in Ireland. You know, they have a great time. 25% of them married Irish women.
Did they really?
That's pretty high percentage,
oh, my goodness.
Right? And in Derry. And then through doing this research, one of the great stories was the only warship in World War II with a black crew, only one, where black sailors actually went into combat. Their first port of call was in Ireland, right? And they said it was the first time they were treated as Americans. You know, they were called Yanks. It was a segregated navy, a segregated country. They go to Ireland, and suddenly they're Yanks. So that story. So I'm telling all these stories. And by getting involved with the Navy, even though, you know, I'm a hippie, I marched against every war, right? But I'm really, it was so admiring of the military. I got to know the U.S. Marine Corps. Because for another, Kathleen, I shouldn't, too Irish. I do those circle stories. So I thought, oh, wouldn't it be perfect if the Marines had been in Derry? But everybody I spoke to said, no. They were only in the Pacific. Well, guess what? They were in Derry. And they were based at Beach Hill House Hotel, which was owned and run by a friend of mine.
Oh, my gosh.
Patsy O'Kane. And that began since 1995. Every year we've had commemorations. The Secretary of the Navy came over. And it's been a wonderful experience. And the Marines and contemporary Marines have really hooked on to the story because there's a tree there where the Marines in 1943 carved their initials before they left. And now present-day Marines do it. So it's really a wonderful story. And the only problem with it had been my research was really based on stories that I got from veterans, from people that were actually there. And it was hard to find documentary evidence. And I would go to the National Archives and I'd say, you know, I'm interested. And it's a very macho field, military history, right? And here I'd come and they'd go, dear, the Marines were in Iceland, not Ireland. And I'd want to kill them. Finally, about 2 years ago, we found 150 boxes with all the files from the Navy base.
Oh, my.
And what we found in there, and when I showed all this information and it was analyzed, a military historian said, well, by my calculations, having Derry as a port, with the ship repairs that they did there, with the hospital, shortened the war by 2 years.
Oh, what a story.
It's an amazing story. And then, just to make it a little better, John Hume remembered the Marines being there. They taught him to play baseball. And he told them which of the greyhounds in the illegal track would win because he'd see them getting a shot beforehand. So all this is going on. But the best part is one of the Marines gave him a penny. And on the penny, it said, E pluribus unum, right? And so he explained to him that that was the motto of the United States, one from many. And John Hume kept that penny. And he said that became the philosophy that helped him bring peace to Northern Ireland, that you could have many traditions and one people. So it's a wonderful, wonderful story, and we're going to be telling it at Irish Fest. We've got a Quonset hut. We've got people in Marine uniforms.
Oh, my goodness. You're actually telling
the
story
telling
with
the story there.
People there.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Heritage Center. Mary Blake from Derry has led a whole contingent over. Conor Donnelly, who's the nephew of Patsy O'Kane at Beach Hill, is here. And also, the best part is I'm already getting calls from people who have family members that were in Derry during World War II.
Oh, Mary.
So anyone who's listening who has a family member or any connection, and one of our great supporters was General Martin Burnt of the Marine Corps, who brought over contingents of Marines. And he, unfortunately, passed yesterday at a very young age, 62. However, I talked to Patsy this morning, and we're naming the archive and everything that we're doing, the Martin R. Burnt Archive, because with a grant from the Northern Ireland Rural Development Association, we're now digitizing all the information that's in the archive so it won't be lost. So nobody's going to say the Marines were in Iceland, not Ireland. They'll know. And I won't go on and on because I know we've got, but they were led by this tall, redheaded Boston Irishman called Red Dugan, right? And they, of course, the Marines loved being in Ireland. You know, they just reveled in it. And he was bragging about how great the Marines were. And the Lord Mayor of Derry got sick of it. And he said, well, he said, the Marines can't play the bagpipes. A month later, they had a bagpipe band. They'd hired a local man. And that band became famous in the Marine Corps. And there still is a Marine Corps bagpipe band. And they wear a shamrock on their, you know, on their badge that he developed. So it's one story after another. We brought back some of the veterans that were there. We brought back the black veterans that had been there. And, of course, every time they come, they get the same welcome they got originally. So I'm really excited of being involved in it. And as you said, I'm writing a sequel to Galway Bay. And it's very touching to me that the children of these immigrants, you know, were the ones that fought in World War II. And interestingly, the Marine Corps had a huge percentage of Irish Americans. So to think that here come these grandsons of these immigrants that fled Ireland back, you know, to save really the world during World War II. It's a really touching story.
It makes you cry.
It does make me cry.
Yeah.
I mean, General Burnt, who was a tough guy, Vietnam, he's the one that rescued Scott O'Grady. I remember that story. When he came over, he started to cry because he said, this ground, this country that has endured so much and still kept its spirit, kept its music. I mean, see these young people full of the same tradition. He said, no wonder there's such a connection between the Marine Corps and all of the services in Ireland.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here and told that story and that you're bringing it to part of Irish Fest. I will definitely
We spend our summers in northern Wisconsin, you know, and I met a guy there who had been, his father had been there. So it's all over the country, but it's one of those stories that kind of hide in plain sight. People don't veterans don't tell their stories until right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very sad but true thing. Mm-hmm. They don't talk about it, but when the end comes, then they're willing to talk about it. So it's been a great experience for me.
Oh, marvelous. I want to talk about Galway Bay more, too, and the famine and your history as we carry on with this hour. We're talking about Irish Fest this hour because it opens today, actually, on the Summerfest grounds in downtown Milwaukee. It is a huge festival. I have done interviews for the past 31 years on the radio about this festival, and my best job there ever was judging the bake-off contest. I don't know why I ever lost that. That was my best job ever. It was better than being a radio announcer. So I hope to resume that at some point. As Mary Pat said, it is filled with wonderful, wonderful Irish music, and we're delighted to have the members of the band Gwicha. They are all students. They're very young. They're from the University of Limerick, and they play traditional music, and they play it absolutely beautifully. They've all won competitions on their various instruments in Ireland and throughout the world. They have been really discovered, I think, fairly recently. They have a brand new CD. They've traveled to Africa, where they were a huge hit, and they are all in our studios. They're going to play music for us and talk about their music. Tadhg O'Maher is on the piano and accordion. And Tadhg, is it unusual to have your instrument featured as much as it is in Irish music?
Not so much nowadays. I suppose the piano, I suppose, came into Ireland via the States, really. I suppose back in the 1920s kind of era, it was when the major recordings over here were happening of Irish music. And what happened was, obviously, the piano was a popular instrument over here back then. And there's all sorts of theories ranging from, I suppose, that there was piano unions and that they had to actually, by law, be on X amount of records per day or whatever it was, so that it was actually kind of nearly forced on the Irish music, and then it actually seemed to add what was lost when we separated the music from the dancing for the first time on these recordings. And so when that came back to Ireland, then the piano just took off back in Ireland. So it's really thanks to the US that maybe I'm playing in Milwaukee this weekend.
And you're from where in Ireland?
I'm from Dublin myself, but living the last few years in Limerick down at university with all these guys.
And you're studying at the University of Limerick. What's the major? Is it music studies?
It's the only degree in the country that is a full BA, bachelor's in Irish music. And that's where we're actually, would you believe, missing our graduation. I believe this weekend.
Are you really?
So we're thinking of trying to find some robes and going on stage in some robes. We're not sure.
Well, you definitely need some presents of some
kind. Right.
We'll have to find some presents for you somewhere. So you all met each other, and it's an amazing story because you're all extremely talented musicians, but you clicked together, and you've become, I understand, quite a sensation. Well, you don't have to be, have to be shy
about
it.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
That's why you're in America, to learn to say, yes, we are great.
Also joining us, Anya McCreaney is playing the fiddle and also plays vocals and has a gorgeous voice. We'll hear her sing in a moment. Thank you very much for being with us. You were the one who were the big hit in Africa, right? They heard you sing and just were captivated by you.
Yeah, a lot of the Africans never seen a female really in a band. They couldn't believe that there was a female amongst all the males. And then especially whenever I played and sang, they were really taken aback. And there was one particular story that there's a song that I sing called Tom Curha, Ave Amainer Imli, which is the Irish for I'm weary from lying alone. And the story's about a young girl, and she doesn't have a boyfriend, and she's afraid that if she doesn't find one soon that she's going to be on her own forever. And so I was telling the story to the group of Africans, and all of a sudden I get a big cheer. And I can't understand why I get a cheer. I thought, God, I'm a great storyteller, you know. And it wasn't until after the show that I realised that whenever I was talking about the young girl who was going to end up on her own forever, that these four boys standing behind me were all pointing to me.
It's a wonderful story. Can you play some of that? We have to pause for a moment. We'll meet the other members of your group in a moment. Can you play a little bit of that before we pause?
Of that song,
I'd love to hear it. Absolutely beautiful. Very, very nice. Thank you. We'll talk about your tradition and continue. We want to talk to Mary Pat about the famine in Ireland and the story that she has outlined just so beautifully and touchingly. And it makes you think about the strength that the Irish have. You know, I sit here thinking about the Irish Americans, too, and what people in Ireland have gone through. It's just been, I know a lot of other countries have as well, but the horrible famine and the strength it took to rebuild, it's just a story. We'll talk more about that in a moment. And Mary Pat was interested in hearing from people who may have been in Derry in World War II, and there might be somebody listening. You never know. I mean, you just never know. So here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We also, for those of you who are fortunate enough to win our very random drawing, if you want to go to our Facebook page, we do have some tickets for Irish Fest, which starts today on the Summerfest grounds in Milwaukee. So write us a little whatever you want. Write whatever you want, and then we'll send some of you to Irish Fest. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you. marvelous, and so early in the morning, too, I might add. The other members of the group, will you come and just sort of talk over a microphone so I can hear a little bit about you? Playing the guitar and the banjo, Connell O'Kane.
Yeah.
Connell, where are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia, actually.
Philadelphia, and how you spent some summers in Ireland, is right? Move into the mic.
Yeah. What happened was I sort of finished up high school, and then I figured I'd take a year off before I went to college. You know, spending sort of bumming around Galway playing music, and that was pretty much my plan. And I did that, and I just had a blast. So I was really enjoying myself over in Ireland, loving playing the music. So I figured I'd stay there and study music while I was at it. So a friend of mine had done the same course that we did, and he told me about it. So I went down and auditioned, and that's where I met these guys.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. It's just you sound so great. Also joining us is Connell O'Kane playing. That's you. Colm Phelan playing the bodhrán and percussion. Tell us about the instrument and about you.
Well, I suppose it's quite a short history compared to some of the other instruments, but it's one that's probably symbolic of Irish music and has become a very prominent instrument in bands lately. Myself, I've been playing for nearly 11 years, and I actually grew up playing music with James Harvey here, who's playing banjo, and the two of us used to play all the way up through the Flas and the competitions together.
Oh, you did? Oh,
and,
nice.
So we've been friends since a young age, and then fortunate enough that he joined us in college then a year after we started. And as soon as he joined, we nipped him in and got him straight into the band, and we're delighted to have him. So
wonderful. James, grab a microphone. So you've been playing since you were a young lad as well.
Yeah, I started the mandolin when I was 7 and the banjo when I was 10. Uh-huh. And so I've been playing, you know, well over 10 years now. So and I suppose I've won a few competitions along the way then as well. So
I suppose
he's
you
quite
have.
Modest. Yeah.
So this is really a seminal year for all of you. It seems as though you're at the point in your young musical careers where you're just about to take off. You could be spending many years together playing music all over the world, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, as Connell said, fingers crossed. Like that's our aim and our goal. Like first of all, it's just great to be playing the music that you love, and it's even better for us and lucky that we'll get to play our music to such a big audience here at Milwaukee and right around the States. This is our first time touring in the States, and we've been blessed that we have an 8-week tour, which is quite an extensive tour. So we're not actually back home until the 19th of September. So any other dates or places that people might see us would be great as well. So.
Yeah, well, you're going to love this festival. It really
Definitely.
It has a long history, and it's just a marvelous. And the setting can't be beat. It's right on Lake Michigan and just beautiful. And the sun's going to shine, and it's going to be warm, and you're just going to have
the nights are going to be long.
And the nights are going to be long. No sleep. You even got up early for a radio show. Yeah, good for you. Well, we're looking forward to hearing you. You're performing tonight at 5 o'clock on the Aer Lingus stage and tomorrow at 8:30 on Aer Lingus. Also Saturday at 3:30 in the afternoon on Aer Lingus and Sunday at 2 o'clock, same stage. So we invite all our listeners to stop and see you. You're just marvelous. Yeah, marvelous.
No, thanks for
Mary Pat, when you talk about tradition is so deep, you talk about the tradition that you wove together in all of your books and the musical tradition. Here it is. We have these very, very young people. I mean, they're in their 20s, and listen to how they play music. And they've obviously drawn on hundreds and hundreds of years of Irish tradition.
That, to me, that's what's so exciting. My husband is from Tyrone and Carrickmore, and so I know his nieces and nephews, and, you know, we visit a lot. And to see the music in such wonderful hands and with such love, I mean, to say I started at 10, you know, I mean, it's
right.
So thrilling to me because, you know, what you don't realize is I know when Irish Americans were afraid in some ways that we'd lose our identity, that it would just be kind of subsumed into the United States. And the one thing that, you know, they had to leave everything they loved behind. The only thing they could take with them was their stories and their music. And then to have this wonderful kind of cross-fertilization where now kind of the descendants of the old immigrants can meet the real, as we used to say in Chicago, the real Irish, and really connect again to the tradition to see. And when I was watching you sing, Anya, I was thinking, no wonder those GIs married Irish women. I mean, can you imagine? Here they come. They think they're going to be in battle, and they're standing watching a beautiful Irish girl sing a song. I mean, you know, I'm surprised it wasn't 100%. So thank you, really. Thank you from another generation to see that the way you're carrying on the tradition in such a fresh way. Which is good too, you know, refreshing it and making it and bringing it to places like Africa. One of the most moving things for me was bringing over a lot of African-American Marines who were fascinated by the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland and feeling such affinity between the Irish struggle, like you said, 800 years of struggle under all kinds of opposition. And here we are, you know?
Mm-hmm. Here we are. Let's talk a little bit because it's foremost on my mind. I had read part of Galway Bay when you were with us 2 years ago, but I spent this summer, it was my summer of Mary Pat and Charles Dickens, actually. And I also love Charles Dickens. But I was just immersed in your story while I was on this beautiful little place in northern Minnesota. And so struck. This Galway Bay, if you're not familiar with it, is one of Mary Pat's books. And it's based on her own great-great-grandmother, Honora Kelly, who she outlines the great starvation of the 1840s in Ireland. And they came to New Orleans and then ultimately came to Chicago, where they really helped form a city. The way you describe the suffering that took place is just unbelievable, heart-wrenching, unbelievable, the strength it took to live.
No, exactly. And, you know, I grew up not really knowing it, not really knowing the story. And I was doing these documentaries, working with John Hume, going to Ireland, and people would say to me, you know, well, what county are you from? And I'd say Cook County, you know, Chicago, because that's all I knew. And it became almost an obsession to really connect. What you probably don't know is, as proud as all of us Irish Americans are being Irish, lots of us don't really know the exact place where our families are from, mm-hmm. because it's a long time ago and there were no records at that time to have access to. So, but I had my father had a cousin who would live to be 107 years old. She was a BVM nun. And she taught at Jesu over here. She taught first grade for years. The family legend is she taught Pat O'Brien in first grade now. I don't know how true that is. And so I realized that she had actually known the people that survived the Great Starvation. So I was desperate to hear about what did they say, what did they tell you. And she said, they didn't talk about it. And that was the way it was. They just put it aside. You know, this great suffering, certainly it was there, but they didn't talk about it. They didn't kind of impose it on the next generation. But I think now, and in Ireland too, the first commemoration day of the Great Starvation in Ireland happened in 2009. The very first. Because I'm sure you grew up. Did you hear much about it in school or anything? No, it wasn't really talked about. And now that Ireland is prosperous, I mean, I know there's a problem right now, but compared to what Ireland's been through, you know, losing a few points in your bond rating is not the end of the world. I mean, they're going to be fine. I happen to know the Taoiseach, Enda Kenny. I've known him for about 30 years. I think he's going to do a great job. Ireland's going to come back stronger than ever. You know, the resilience of the Irish people is just beyond belief. However, the sense of the Great Starvation, I mean, to have a million people die of starvation in a place, you know, it was mostly the West, a quarter of the country, and the country itself is only half the size of the state of Illinois. So it was a very concentrated, and it could have been prevented. Other countries, when they had the potato blight, they closed their ports and kept the food in. Britain kept exporting food from Ireland. Ireland was the breadbasket of England, and the landlords kept taking the food out. The last time I was at Milwaukee Fest, this guy came up to me. I wrote the book, to be honest, for women, because I think the strong Irish woman is an amazing story. However, to my great joy, men have really liked the book. So this guy came up to me, and he was kind of like angry, and he said, this is the first time I ever cried reading a book. And I'm saying, well, gee, I'm sorry. I mean, I apologize. And I said, well, what got to you? And he said, I'm the father of young children. And to think that I would have to watch my children starve while carts of food were being taken away, he said, it's just beyond belief. And I mean, the resilience of the people. And as I say, a million died, but 2 million escaped. And how they got out, I will never know. And that's our, you know, these are our ancestors. And I mean, it is an amazing story. And it really, do you know, it's never, there's never been a movie about it. There's
really?
Never been a TV series. Now we're developing a mini series. And knock on wood, I'm afraid to say this out loud, but Jim Sheridan is interested in being involved. And there's a producer in New York. We're just putting it together now because I think that's the only way in our society right now to get a story out is to have it visual and have it out there. So, because it is an amazing story. And it's yes, it's a tragic story, but it's a story of triumph, too.
Yes.
Because look at these young people. You know, look at Irish America, 40 million of us. And, you know, all descended. Not only was John Kennedy descended from famine immigrants, but so was Jackie Kennedy. So, right. I mean, and in my story.
So are you. So am I. I don't know the story, but I am.
We all are.
And here we are. We're alive here.
I know. We're alive. I know. When I finished, I thought, oh, I better have a happy life because a lot of people suffered for me. And then in my story, Honora's grandson, Ed Kelly, became the mayor of Chicago. And he was very instrumental in getting Roosevelt elected and Harry Truman. I'm calling the new book Kelly Green. Because he turned Chicago green. He did the lakefront. He was very connected to Ireland. And he was the first one in our family to make a lot of money. So that's another story. But, I mean, it is the story of the Irish. And to have Irish Fest, to have this chance of celebrating it.
Yes.
You know? And you mentioned the documentaries. I'm going to show mine 9 o'clock on Friday morning at the Milwaukee School of Engineering. And then I'm going to be speaking at 1 o'clock. But the whole fest is a celebration of survival.
Right.
You know, is a celebration. And the fact that it started 30 years ago, you know, the 80s were when that's why it's so important that you're here. Because in the 80s, we had a lot of people coming from Ireland. That's when Dancing at Lunasa. That's when, you know, My Left Foot. That's when The Crying Game. That's when these movies came from Ireland. And it was like kind of the descendants of the old immigrants met the new young immigrants. And it was a very fruitful cross-fertilization. And Milwaukee Fest is an example. When I tell people in Ireland that 150,000 Irish Americans will gather, I mean, they're blown away. You haven't seen it yet, right?
No, they haven't seen it yet.
Because
get ready.
Ireland doesn't celebrate its heritage in the way that we do. You know, I mean, I think you're just too modest. You know, we shouted from the housetops, you know.
We do indeed. We have phone calls coming in. I think some people who did serve in World War II.
Oh,
but we want to hear a little bit more music. So let's Tig, if you would grab a microphone and tell us a little bit about what you're going to play. And I'm also just before we pause and start taking calls, tell me a little bit about the substance of what you play. Where do you gather your material? How informed are you by the past, and how are you adding to the past in what you do?
I guess studying for 4 years in the university, we got a great chance to look at, you know, a lot of archival stuff, and, you know, as well as being really in touch with all the modern day performers and the most prominent performers at that. So we have a right mix of some old stuff, some of our own contemporary compositions, as well as some of the other contemporary musicians of today and their compositions. So I think what we're going to do now is one of Martin O'Connor's. He's a fantastic box player from Ireland at the moment, and this is a tune of his called Rockin' the Boat, and it's one that we kind of play. We play it in a set normally alongside another tune, and we kind of just put our own stamp on it, I suppose. Like,
Very nice. Thank you so much. Wicha, what does it mean? What's the origin of
It's all kind of Donegal Irish slang for come here. I believe it also kind of happened, you know, when you were in trouble. It was kind of like, you know, finger pointed and gotcha, you know.
That's good. It's a good name. Donegal is my favorite part of Ireland,
Can
I must say.
What was O'Kane from Philadelphia? What's your first name?
Connell.
Connell. All right. Can you imagine if his great-great-grandmother, who had to leave Ireland, knew that he'd be going to the University of Limerick and playing with a group of Irish? Wouldn't it make her happy?
I know.
Connell's actual parents are from... He explained it himself, I think.
Yeah. My dad's actually from Donegal. My dad's from Donegal. Yeah, he only came over to the States in the 70s.
And your mom, is she?
No, my mom's from Philly.
But is she Irish descent, too?
Yeah, I think...
See?
I think her grandparents might have been from Cork.
Right. That's the other interesting thing, too, the contemporary who really know their history and then kind of connecting to people that have to find out.
Right. We need to pause for a moment and we'll return. You are listening. We're celebrating Irish Fest, which opens today, and you can please stop by and see Mary Pat. And if you're a World War II veteran who was in Derry, please stop by and see Mary Pat. Were you going to be in the cultural area?
The cultural area. They have a whole village.
Yes,
it's
great.
Derry-Donegal connection, and we'll have a Quonset hut, and like I said, and there's a beautiful banner we've got. I found footage from the March of Time newsreels of the Marines and the other sailors.
Mary Pat, wonderful.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. And I feel very humble, you know, to be able to tell these stories. Because you know how it is, Kathleen. You have the same experience. It kind of comes through you. It's almost, you know, magical, really.
Yeah. More, and we'll take a phone call, too. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
3, 4.
Wicha performing tonight at 5 o'clock on the Aer Lingus stage, tomorrow at 8:30, same stage, Saturday 3:30, same stage, and Sunday 2 o'clock, same stage. They're all students at the University of Limerick, and they are, as you can understand why, taken off all over the world. Mary Pat Kelly is also joining us. Mary Pat was here 2 years ago. We always do Irish Fest shows. I think I've done one. I've been in radio for 36 years in Milwaukee, and for 31 years, I've always done an Irish Fest show and look forward to it. But the time goes so fast. We have a phone call for you, Mary Pat, and this is Matt is calling us from Hartford. Hi, Matt. Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Kathleen.
Hi, Matt.
I was just stunned by the program today, and I'm really glad that you have it. And it reminded me of my dad, who was a World War II veteran, and he was the first one, I think, he was the first one drafted in his county. He grew up south of Duluth, Minnesota, and he was stationed in Northern Ireland in Ballycastle.
Yeah.
And then he was part of Operation Torch in North Africa and into Italy, but he loved Ireland so much and his experience there when he was stationed there that he took us, the family, in 1975 back to Ireland with him, and we backpacked across Ireland, and it's the best way to see the country and to meet the people, and I don't think I've been treated any better in my life. Mm-hmm. I was probably 9 years old at the time, and I don't think I've been treated any better in my life than I was among the Irish.
That's great, Matt. And you know, my email is mpk@marypatkelly.com.
Do that again.
mpk@marypatkelly.com.
marypatkelly.com.
Send me your address, and I'll send you a copy of the documentary because the Minnesota, it was the their like National Guard that were the first ones that came to Ireland. That's why he probably was there. And I've got interviews with this Hinkey, who was the first to step off the boat from Minnesota. And you might see, I've got a lot of archival footage. You might even see your dad, because from that group, Darby's Rangers was formed. And Operation Torch, what he's talking about, was the invasion of North Africa, which, so he, I'd really love to, talk to you and send you a copy of the documentary. I'm showing it here. Are you around Milwaukee?
I am. I'm in Hartford, and I'm a teacher in Hartford and a social studies teacher. And I'd love, I'm at school today, and I was planning on coming back to school tomorrow and get some work done, but I might change my plan.
Well, come down. I'll give you the documentary into your hand. How about that?
And the man on the cover is
Sergeant Hinkey, and I would bet money that he and your father knew each other because they were both from the same area in Minnesota. So,
yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'd love to talk to you. And my dad, we just celebrated his 95th birthday.
Bring him. Bring him.
He's still in Minnesota.
Well, bring him.
I'll talk to him tonight.
Yeah, I'll talk to him tonight,
and then maybe, we'll see what we can do.
Frontier Airlines, come on,
You got to be there. You got to
bring him. We'll give him, he'll get a free trip to Ireland if you bring him, I promise.
Oh, yeah. All right, then you've got to be there.
You got to be there, Matt. This is Providence. I spent 6 years in the Sisters of Providence, and I'm a big believer in, when God knocks on your door, you better open it.
Exactly. So she'll see you there
tomorrow or
Saturday or whenever the day may be. 31st Irish Fest on the Milwaukee Lakefront grounds, the Summerfest grounds, and it opens today and it runs through Sunday. Not only do you have great music, you have this whole cultural area too, and Mary Pat Kelly will be there with her remarkable story that she's been telling us about. And we also have some passes that we're giving to some of our listeners. We're doing this in a kind of unusual way, but if you go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, then just write a little deal about why you would like to go, and we will, I'm sure, have more people than we have tickets, but we will pick somebody, based on some unknown reason. I don't know. You captured our fancy or whatever it is, so do that now, and we'll have passes for you down at Irish Fest. Joining us in our studios, Mary Pat Kelly, and she is, she's all over the place. She's doing this documentary. She's doing a sequel right now to Galway Bay. She's a documentary filmmaker. She tells her personal story in Galway Bay. It's a novel, but it's really the story of her own great-great-grandmother. And we have Gwicha with us in our studios as well. They are an up-and-coming Irish band. They're all students, young students at the University of Limerick, and they are going to be performing at Irish Fest as well. Tell me what it's like for all of you to be here in the United States for the first time and to be performing it. You obviously, everybody does, has some relatives who came to this country. Maybe you know them, maybe you've never even met them. But is it a big trip for you? Have you been anticipating this?
Yeah, well, I suppose we've been looking forward to this. I suppose we've spent 3-4 years working towards basically trying to get out to the States. It's really the place where you want to hit. And particularly, like for us growing up, Milwaukee is the one you hear about back home as well, So it's kind of really what we're looking forward to. But it's great. Like, we've met some of the nicest people, and, we've had, we have the festivals, and then during the week, we're doing other gigs, and the amount of times we've just ended up, hanging by a lake under a full moon, with just the nicest people in the world. And it's just all these experiences, as well as all the shows and all the fun we're having on stage. It's just really been a great experience all around.
Like, so you've heard about this festival in Ireland, the one in Milwaukee?
Yeah. I've actually been out here in 2007, and just as Tig was saying, like, we've all grown up dreaming about coming out to Milwaukee. So in 2007, I was lucky enough just to come over as a, just watching people and watching bands and as a spectator, and absolutely loved it. And you know, to come back now 4 years later with the band and actually get to perform on the stage, Aer Lingus stage, that I remember watching other bands like Bjog and people like that playing on the stage. It's a great experience and a nice turnaround, you know. So
yeah. And Derry and Donegal are featured this year. There are always a lot of musicians from that area. They always feature another county. So those are featured. Mary Pat?
I was just wondering, do you have a website where we could see where you're touring?
Yeah, all our tour dates are up on www.goitse.ie. That's GOITSE.ie.
Are you coming to New York or are you going to be around?
Around the 9th of September, we're going to Syracuse, I think I have relations there that I've never met before. So hopefully they can come out and come out and say hello to me. So
you do for us when we go over there. Let me tell you,
so
relations.
Hopefully, if they're listening, they do know me. So.
Yeah,
believe me, we'll be spreading the word.
Yeah, we definitely
I
will.
I always forget to say my website too, marypatkelly.com.
And Mary Pat Kelly.
I'm going to be touring around. Now, if we could hook it up, if I could read from the book and you could play the music, we'd be
terrific. Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. That'd be very nice. And we have these websites on our Facebook page too, so in case you can't keep track of all of them, then go to those. Well, it's going to be a wonderful festival. You want to talk just a little bit, Mary Pat, and we have about a minute left before we hear a little bit more music, about the tradition of music and literature. We always put those together when we do Irish Fest shows, but it's very strong. They're very, very strong in both, among the strongest in the whole world.
It is. I mean, actually, Ireland has the oldest vernacular literature in the world, the oldest. The Toyne, all those stories. I mean, it's so rich, and the storytelling, the long nights by the fire, the memory that people could come and recite these stories in poetry form over three or four nights for hours and hours, and then, of course, be accompanied by the music. And so many, like when she sang her story about the girl that doesn't want to be left alone, in every song there is a story, and so the two are married. And literature, I mean, remember the first time I went to Ireland, we went to a pub, and this man stood up and started to recite Dangerous Dan McGrew and The Lovely Lady Lou, right? And every time he finished a verse, someone gave him a pint. And by 30 verses, you can imagine.
Oh,
right?
Lordy, yeah.
And he stumbled and went down, and I looked down at him, and he said, Jesus falls the first time. And I thought, Irish writers didn't make up anything. They just wrote down what they heard. So I think, as everyone who's visited Ireland knows, the level of conversation, the crack, the yep. joking, all that is part of this tradition where words, you know, words didn't cost anything. It wasn't like painting or other arts. Words and music were something that could come out of your soul and out of your brain, and nobody could take them away. And that's the amazing thing. After all these 800 years of oppression, all the things that the music and the stories lasted. And it's that's what we're celebrating. It's a wonderful thing.
It sure is a wonderful thing. Please go meet Mary Pat. She'll be on the grounds. And go hear not only the group who've been performing for us so graciously the last hour, Gwitcha, but all of the 150 or bands and individual musicians from all over Ireland and the United States as well who will be performing. We're going to go out with a little bit of music. Tell us what it is, and it's all yours. And thank you, everybody, so much. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease as well. What are you playing?
Thanks a million for having us.
Yeah.
We're delighted to be here. But we're going to finish off with a set that we called the Wing Commander. And we're just going to play a snippet from it. So hopefully you'll enjoy it anyway.